spend, frankly, most of our time and energy and effort focused on us. I don't spend that much time worrying about what the competition is doing. Obviously, we care a lot about the client and the consumer and retaining them and providing them with a great experience, but it's just as important that we're providing the therapist with that type of experience.
Welcome to ProCo 360, the show that, like many, features successful entrepreneurs, but unlike others, all our guests choose Colorado. They are people whose businesses you pass and see the signs and wonder about, like today's guest, Jeremy Morgan, CEO of Elements Massage. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. I say live, work, love Colorado because success is different here. Success in Colorado is multidimensional. You, I, and my guests get that. In this episode, Jeremy Morgan and I will talk about the massage industry, the franchise model, and how one manages a personal services business when each location is independently run. I'm fascinated by this business. The market seems so saturated, I just don't get how it works. If you're curious too, stick around. Jeremy, thanks for joining me today.
I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
And we're going to dive in a moment. I want to thank our sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado and MicroStar Keg Logistics. I appreciate their support for Colorado entrepreneurs and for this show. And Jeremy, just before we started the interview, you wanted to say, hey, there's a couple do's and don'ts when we talk about the industry you're in. Why don't you share those first and set the stage?
Yeah, you know, I think for people, most people have a general sense of what getting a massage is all about, but there's definitely vernacular that I think that has evolved, and I think it's really important in our industry that massage therapists are known as a therapist versus a masseuse. That our studios are massage studios, not massage parlors. That where you get the massages are massage tables, not massage beds. And you know, look, there are it's an industry that has been a long time. We really believe that massage therapy is part of a general wellness routine, and we really try to position everything we talk about our business in that type of way.
Well, I'm glad, and you may have to scold me in the middle of this interview.
Yeah.
I go off the track, but I want to start with this, the idea, the thing that really captivated me before we even get started on how you run these businesses. But everywhere you go, massage now, massage studios, it's almost like Starbucks. It's like everywhere down the street and in every shopping center, right? And then if you go down Broadway or Federal, they're all independently owned. And it just seems like the industry is like crazy overbuilt. And you've told me, no, it's really not.
Yeah, in fact, if anything, there's room for many more studios. If there's a limiting factor around the massage business, it's actually around the number of massage therapists. Massage as something that people do in their wellness routine has just, it's gone from being something that's maybe a little faddish or a little bit nichey to something that's really big. It's growing like 12% year over year.
That's almost inconceivable to me. I mean, to me, as I think of the industry, I think about a bunch of massage therapists sitting in a big circle massaging each other. Like who's left to get massages?
Well, I think what's happened is as people have gotten more into their own fitness routines and they've gotten more into things like fitness trackers and understanding their bodies, I think people have really learned that massage therapy can just be part of that and what it means to take care of your own body.
So it's really, what you're saying is that the evolution of the industry and the explosive growth is based on wellness, not based on a decadent pleasure of getting massage.
That's exactly right. In fact, you know, we do a lot of research studies on what different generations think about our business. And ultimately, I think, you know, the oldest generations, people that grew up in the 30s or 40s or 50s, it was almost viewed as, I mean, you would never want to talk about, you know, taking time for yourself and doing something that's good for you. And you flash forward to millennials and it's just part of the routine is, well, you take care of your body the same, you know, you take care and get a massage the same way that you go to the gym, the same way that you get your hair cut. And so that's part of the reason that there's so much growth.
Well, there's a lot of talk about how social media is a sense of self-absorption. And, you know, is there any of that within, you know, like, is it now permissible to get massages? Are people seeing it differently or is it still going back? Like, okay, I'll just ask, of the people who get massage, like what percentage do you think are wellness related versus just wanting to treat ourselves nicely?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, if you were to go to the Four Seasons into their spa, it's mostly about, hey, let's just have a nice relaxing hour. Yeah. I'm on vacation. I think that in our membership model, in fact, our name, originally when we were founded, we were Elements Therapeutic Massage. And so we are kind of born out of the idea that massage is part of a wellness routine. We were founded by a massage therapist. And we think that the need for monthly massage, the reason we have the membership, is to keep it as part of that wellness approach.
You mentioned that there's a shortage of massage therapists. How stable are those who work you mentioned haircuts. When I think about newly trained people who do haircuts, they kind of start at supercuts and then they work their way up to one. And then they ultimately end up at a high-end place.
Sure.
Are therapists, massage therapists, in a similar thing, or how does that work in your business?
It works a couple different ways. So first of all, massage therapy is something that you do go to school for and get education. And it is a state-regulated certificate. In the state of Colorado, it takes 500 hours of training to become a massage therapist, and then you have to renew your certificate and license every year. So most massage therapists are paying on the order of $8,000 to $10,000 for this education.
Well, 500 hours, you don't come out as a complete rookie.
No, you don't. You really know what you're doing coming out of that other side. Now, many people go into massage therapy with the goal of, I want to own my own studio. Mm-hmm. I want to be an independent provider. Some people do that as a side business, and they run it out of their house, or they do house calls.
And some do both.
Right?
So how do you manage? I mean, the therapists work at an Elements studio. They're independently owned. So how do you manage therapists?
Yeah, it's a really good question. We have an approach where, first of all, it's really important. The therapists at an Elements studio, these are W-2 employees. These aren't independent contractors.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So they work for those Elements owners, and those Elements owners really have a lot of tools at their disposal that we provide to help with training, with onboarding, what kind of processes and procedures. Probably the thing that we pride ourselves in the most that therapists, frankly, don't learn very well in school is how to communicate with a client.
Mm-hmm.
They
learn
all about the body and what's going to help alleviate different aches and pains, but they don't really learn very well how to communicate with client and make a fantastic client experience. And that's what we're really good at, is having that therapist have an informed conversation with the client on really learning what they need.
So here's for me, potentially one of the elephants in the room in a conversation like this is, those of us who had therapeutic massage know that some are better than others.
That's right.
So you're like 3 degrees away from being able to actually control a customer experience because you don't own the franchise,
right,
and you don't manage directly the people doing it. And we all know that massage therapists range in skill level, effectiveness, and so forth. So as the guy who's the CEO of the top, of this entire experience with the customer, what do you do to run this thing?
Well, what you do is first you put in a lot of processes and tools that help those owners manage their teams. To your exact question, we have a proprietary matching algorithm. So what's really important in making sure you get the right massage is that we match you with the type of therapist for the type of massage you need. And so when you call an Elements massage for the first time, there's a whole series of questions that the person on the end of the telephone line is going to ask you. They know their team really well, and they're going to come out of the other side and say, okay, Dave wants this kind of deep tissue massage, or he's a marathon runner or whatever. I'm going to put him with this, with Susie, this therapist, who's likely to be a great match. And then Susie in turn is going to have a discussion with you before the massage starts and throughout the massage to make sure she's meeting those needs.
Yeah.
So it's really all about communication at the end of the day. And that's an easy thing to say, but we put tools and training in place so that the owners can enact that.
So that's an interesting piece. And that leads me to my next question, because the tools and training, I think, is part of differentiation. But in your industry, differentiation would be like my worst nightmare. Because in prepping for this interview, I went to all the websites of your competitors, yours and all that. And guess what? They all say that they're personalized. They all say they're tailored to your needs. They all say that every client is unique to us, blah, blah, blah. You know, and so the idea of differentiating would be a nightmare for me.
Yeah, I think what the feedback that we get from our clients, and you know, we spend, frankly, most of our time and energy and effort focused on us. I don't spend that much time worrying about what the competition is doing. I know that if we provide our franchisees and our owners and our therapists with the right kind of tools, they're going to provide a great guest experience. And as long as the guest is having a great guest experience with us, they're going to tell their friends, they're going to come back. We have as strong of a retention metrics on our membership as anyone in the industry. And we really think about our business in two ways. Obviously, we care a lot about the client and the consumer and retaining them and providing them with a great experience, but it's just as important that we're providing the therapist with that type of experience.
Ah, that's pretty interesting. I want to remind listeners, this is ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm speaking with Jeremy Morgan, CEO of Elements Massage. And when you're talking about retention metrics, I also know that in your background, you've got one of the skill sets that people call out for you on LinkedIn, for example, is customer insights.
Right.
So how are you marrying your background around customer insight and this notion of retention metrics?
Yeah, it's interesting because I don't think there's anything about my career path necessarily that would have said, man, this guy's going to be the CEO of a massage chain.
Probably not after Smashburger. We could talk about that later. But
That's right. But I do have a background in consumer research, consumer insight. It's something I focused on at Bain. It's something I focused on at Smashburger. And I think just running any type of consumer company, having an orientation for that client experience and what the consumer is looking for is incredibly important.
What do you mean by orientation?
Just thinking through your business through the lens of the customer. And as the franchisor, I have a couple different layers of customers. My franchisees are actually my customers more than anything else. I make my money from my franchisees being successful. They're my client.
Yeah.
The person getting a massage is a client, and ultimately the massage therapist. You mentioned, you know, this explosion of massage studios. They have a lot of choices on places they want to work too, and we have to stand out in that crowd.
You
want to
be the best employer, I suppose, right?
That's right.
So what are you seeing in that space, especially in this market where you say there aren't enough? What are you doing to attract the best massage therapists that you can?
So we're doing several things. One, it generally really resonates with massage therapists that we're focused on the therapeutic side. It's also really resonates a lot that we really enable our therapists to provide the type of massage that they think is appropriate for the client. We're not dictating a massage therapy or massage factory type of approach that at minute 18, you move around and go give the foot massage. It is a customized, personalized thing, and the therapists really appreciate that. The continuing education is a big chunk of it too. So they come out of massage school with 500 hours of education, but ultimately there's a lot of things massage therapists can do to kind of continue to hone their craft and learn new things. And that's a big chunk of what we offer as well.
Got it. I'm curious, as studios have proliferated, options have proliferated, what role do things like location, how far will somebody drive for their preferred provider? And how much will someone pay? How price sensitive is what you're doing?
So what's interesting about it, those things are a little bit related. For the most part, this is still a convenience-oriented occasion. People don't want to drive 40 minutes to their massage studio. Mm-hmm. We have about a 10-minute drive time on average. Our studios are generally spaced at least 5 miles apart.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But 5 miles isn't that far. And so you can have, here in Colorado, we have 18 studios, and we feel like we have room for double that easily in our market areas. And to your point on price, here in Colorado, we're charging $69 per month for our membership, and that's going to get you access to one-hour massage per month.
Yep. And that seems to be, as I've looked around, they seem to be anywhere from 60 to 80 kind of thing, and there's always the introductory blah, 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 right? How do you, this introductory thing, are there people who just like take one and go blah, blah, blah all over the place and just have one?
It can certainly happen, right? I think that Groupon can more or less train the world that you can go get a great offer somewhere. And so in any business, you can always be worried a little bit about the coupon cutters and those value-oriented customers. But ultimately, our first-time rate actually matches our membership rate. So if you were to come in for a second time, it would actually be $100. And so we're able to make money whether it's your first time or whether you're a member.
Well, that's a logical pricing item. That here we're going to give you a member price your first time. You want to stay as a member. That makes perfect sense. I get it. You're not really degrading.
That's
the
exactly
value.
Right.
Yeah. So quick question. What percentage of your sales are for gifts?
For gifts. So our busiest time of the year is in November and December around gift cards. Mm-hmm. And gift cards make up, it's probably not as big as you would think, but it's still really important. It's probably almost 10% of our business.
See, I would think it would be 20 or 30%. It's not.
Well, I think that if we weren't a membership driven model where we didn't have that recurring revenue stream from people coming in, it would be more. Many massage studios and not ours, but they structure themselves on packages where it's like, hey, you're going to buy a 5-pack of massages and come in and use it whenever you want. I think that that type of business model lends itself to more gifting and a higher percentage on gift card sales.
That's interesting. I don't know what to think about it, because as a consumer, a gift pack is kind of nice. I use it whenever I feel like it.
Right.
So, but you've chosen the membership model, a monthly membership. From a consumer's point of view, why is that better?
For a couple reasons. One, I think it goes back to, we really think that for the vast majority of people, a monthly massage is an important part of the wellness routine. So if you're skipping around and getting it, you know, in January and then July and then December, you're not getting the benefits. And so we really find that educating customers on what the benefits of that are, and then once they start to experience, they're like, oh, I totally get it.
Got it.
And then they stay with us for a really long time.
Well, and I asked that question knowing that I may be leading you into some kind of commercial, and I certainly don't want to do. These are just things I'm curious about your business. And last question about sort of the business, like, where do you see it evolving over the next few years?
There's a lot of different things that we could be doing. Going back to our original roots of being Elements Therapeutic Massage, we are really interested in making sure that we continue to lean into that wellness part of the routine. Mm-hmm. We have a really big test of cupping therapy going on in the Pacific Northwest right now that's likely to continue.
Michael Phelps got that started with the red dots all over his body.
And look, it's an interesting modality to talk about, but it also is really therapeutic. It has a lot of similarities to a deep tissue massage, but you're able to, a massage therapist is really, it kind of gives them the equivalent of 8 hands at once. As many cups as they're using, they can
that's
use
a fantasy
those.
For a lot of people.
It is. Yeah. It's interesting. There you go. So, so that's an area that we're leaning into. We're looking at some new essential oils.
Doing product offerings.
Yeah. Exactly.
So let's switch. I want to talk about the idea of managing a business through franchises.
Sure.
There have been some really terrible stories about certain franchisors, including one in Colorado that was a food business and that put themselves before their franchisees. And as you think about, you know, how you think about managing a business where essentially all of the operations are owned by others, how do you think about that?
There's several things that make a good franchisor, and I talk to franchise prospects about this all the time. I mean, ultimately, a franchisor's job is to provide a great brand and the marketing that goes with it, a strong business model, and the tools and training to go execute it. And that's really what my job is as the franchisor, is to provide those things. So then it turns into, you know, how do we make sure that our franchisees are being successful, and how do we deal with the fact that, look, we do take a royalty stream from them and they are, you know, ultimately paying us for those things. Going back to my business consulting background, that's really how I've set up my team. I view my team as just an army of business consultants. We're there to help make these small business owners, our franchisees, more successful. We've seen it in a lot of different contexts, and we can take best learnings and help them do better.
Putting it on the spot, give me an example of a specific thing that a member of your team did to help a franchisee.
Right. Oh man, there's so many examples in this world, but let's talk about pricing. So pricing strategy is something that any given owner in their own market may not have much of an expertise on, but we've got a really strong expertise on what happens when you take price up $10. If you do want to do it, how do you communicate to the members? What's the right time of year? What does that do to your intro rate? And so taking those learnings with any given owner and say, hey, I'm in Spokane, Washington. Here's my competitive set. Here is what they're pricing. What should I do?
So you'll
advise
them.
We can give them a lot of guidance.
That's cool. That's really cool. And I suppose making them your team, making them a member, like being on the same team,
that's right.
All a good thing.
That's exactly right. And I think that turns to, we do that with local marketing. We do that with hiring. We do that with how they're managing their business operations or their client score. So, you know, we're able to go in and diagnose, boy, what could be going better? And then we work with the franchisees on that.
Hey, you're listening to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. I'm speaking with Jeremy Morgan, CEO of Elements Massage. I want to remind you to please visit ProCo360.com so you can subscribe to the newsletter. You'll see blogs. You'll see my books, the books I'm listening to on Audible. So I hope you're enjoying this episode. Please rate it in your podcast app. You're all based, Elements is based in Colorado, as is the parent company, WellBiz Brands. What's Colorado got to do with where you are and how you're doing?
We were really born in Colorado. Our original brand up that was part of WellBiz was Fitness Together, which is a personal training brand that was founded here in Highlands Ranch. And we still own and operate that business as the franchisor. There's 150 units across the country. About 12 years ago, the owners of Fitness Together decided to partner with the original owner of Elements Massage, who had one unit. Michelle had one unit here in Colorado. We partnered with her and said, hey, we really think this brand has potential. Let us take it and franchise it out in the world. And
so you started with just one?
So she started with just one. And when she had one in the grand, we thought she had a really cool approach to it. So we said, hey, let's partner together and go do it.
That's a great story.
Yeah. So it over the last 10 years from when we started franchising, we've been able to go from that one unit up to 250. And Colorado's really just always been home base for us.
That's really cool. Is there something about Colorado that you work with as you build your business or you acquire your team or any of those things?
Colorado's a great place for finding talent, especially. I think that's gotten just better and better over the last several years. I think that particularly in the world of franchising talent. So there's a lot of franchising brands that are based here.
Yeah, there are.
More so than most cities of Denver size. Mm-hmm. And so, and a lot of the tools, regardless of whether it's in restaurants or fitness or something else, as a franchisor, we're really providing those kind of marketing operations and brand type of tools. And so what you would do to help somebody, whether or not they're in a restaurant brand or a wellness brand like ours, can be pretty similar. So there's a lot of great talent we're able to leverage.
Yeah. So if you're hearing any buzzing, it's one of our phones that was sitting on the table. So excuse that.
Probably one of my franchisees looking for some help.
Could be. Yeah. Could be. So you mentioned, you know, there are a lot of restaurant franchises in Colorado, and your background includes restaurant management. So as you think about like what you learned running franchises, one was Smashburger you mentioned earlier. What do you bring from that experience to Elements?
I think one of the biggest things in any franchise brand, whether it's a restaurant or from Smashburger or at Elements, is when you're in a franchise business, you're in a people business, you have to be willing to listen a lot, have a lot of conversations, really understand what's going on out in the field. Because to your point, we don't own the businesses all the way around the country.
Do you own any?
We do. We own 7 studios here in Colorado.
Right. Well, see, you know, I think that may be the difference between the franchisors who succeed and the ones that get it. So talk about that.
Yeah. And at Smashburger, it was similar. Having corporate operations where you are owning and running some of these studios yourselves is a big deal. We actually just in the last 6 months got into the corporate operations business on our own. And really that provides us with 3 things. It lets us have a training platform where we can teach franchisees how to be successful. It gives us a really close ear to the ground on how to run these and what kind of advice we can provide others. And it's really a testing laboratory. So we get to go first. Any harebrained idea I come up with for the chain, I get to put my money where my mouth is and give it a try before I make others do
it. So that's really the question. Are your P&Ls, are you subjecting your store-owned studios to the exact same operating methods that you subject franchisees to?
Absolutely. In fact, I have a lot of incentive to do so. First of all, the way we're a very transparent organization, so any franchise owner is able to see on core metrics any other franchise owner's results, and mine are included. So if I'm showing on that list that I'm not running my studio very well, I'm going to lose a lot of credibility.
Wow.
So have a lot of incentive to run them well. And then secondly, we're able to share in our franchise disclosure documents kind of what profitability looks like of our studios that we're running. Mm-hmm. And it's a representation we can make to future prospects that, hey, you can make money at these. So
can you represent your own location?
You can.
But you can't represent other franchisees' location as far as their results. Is that
there
right?
It depends. It's a little funky. Ultimately, you've got to have the right data. So what generally prohibits franchisors from sharing profitability information of their franchisees is they just don't have the detailed level of information of what's going on. For our corporate operations, obviously, we've got extensive detail on it. And so we're very comfortable with sharing that. And you know, ultimately the franchise disclosure documents is just a way to make sure that whatever we're telling prospects is true.
Right. Of course.
And so when you're looking at what goes on in a franchise location, we have really great, we share a lot of detailed information on what's the revenue, what's their core metrics.
That just seems like the smart and a smart way to do this and a way with integrity. You run your own operations, you run them clean, and you say, this is how we do things in ours. And, you know, if you follow our format, you could expect something, give or take.
It makes that business consulting relationship a lot easier because I'm able to say, look, here's how we're doing it.
Do you ever implement an idea from a franchisee into your test?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we do that all. I mean, frankly, most of our best ideas start from franchise locations. And so as an example, I mean, the cupping test started in franchise locations as an example.
Do they need your permission?
They do.
And so they'd contact you and say, look, I want to experiment with this. What do you think? And you say, yeah, in this case, you say yes.
That's right.
And let us know how you do.
That's right. Now that can become chaos if you're not careful. So we've put a process in place. We call it our innovation laboratory. Mm. We put in place where franchisees are able to submit whatever ideas they want to test, and then my team goes and picks the three or four things we want to focus on for the year.
That's
and we let
cool.
those tests go into place.
That's really cool. It's another collaborative approach
That's
to
right.
working together in the field.
That's right. Like I always tell folks, I don't have to have the idea. There's plenty of ideas out there. Our job is to help to make sure that the franchisees are executing it really well.
Yeah. So. That's really cool. I interrupted you when I had this brilliant question that I still wanted to answer.
Okay.
If you could think about a lesson you learned at Smashburger that you're now applying in Elements, what is that?
So we did a lot of great things at Smashburger. It was a hyper-growth brand. We had a super cool brand that people loved. And one of the things that we did extremely well that was differentiated is we had a regional offering. Our menu is actually different in every city across the country, which is a incredibly difficult thing to do at scale, especially when you're growing that fast. As I take kind of some of those lessons and what I did while we were running marketing there, it's how do you kind of capture that energy that comes from all the PR and consumer awareness and bring that into a brand that's a little bit older, that's not just brand new.
Yeah.
And so this gets to how we innovate within our brand. And so we've got a couple of ideas that we're working hard on that I'm not ready to announce here.
Oh,
but
come
boy,
on.
how do we take that idea and turn it to a big PR launching point? Because we were fantastic at that at Smashburger, and it hasn't historically been a huge core competency of Elements that we're trying to build.
So a way to be better at PR, promoting new innovation and so forth is something you feel like you've learned you're going to bring forward in this business?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think everyone in the world saw what happened in 2016 with how President Trump got all the free media in the world by leveraging the power of social and PR. And I think that at Smashburger, we were really good at that as a retail brand on how do we use social and PR, and we're just trying to bring that into Elements a little bit more.
Well, that'll be fun to watch.
That will be.
Several people on LinkedIn, I did check you out on LinkedIn and found some other interesting things. And
spying on me, huh?
Yeah. A couple people said you were really good at managing ambiguity.
Yeah.
And when you think about ambiguity in your business now, what do you have to manage around that?
So franchise brands, in general, I think the role of a CEO or any leader of teams is managing ambiguity. It's ambiguous what you should prioritize. It's ambiguous what you should focus on. It's ambiguous what people's roles and responsibilities would be or who should be in charge of something. And I really view my job as looking through the 500 things that we could go do. There's no dearth of things we could potentially go do as a tactic to go work on for the business, and figuring out what the three or four things that rise to the top, what's most important, and get my team of 70 people focused on it, and get them to get all these individual owners to focus on it too.
That's pretty cool. Have you seen the book, The One Thing?
Yeah.
You have?
Yeah, I have. I definitely have.
And there's another one called Essentialism, a similar concept. But The One Thing, this idea that there's probably one thing each of us does in our own jobs that if we do it well, everything else
gets figured out.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly
right. So in
right.
your case, because you're running an operation, three or four things, but
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that, you set aside time to review that with the team, to adjust priorities on whatever, annual or quarterly basis. And you say, look, this is what we're going to, there's all kinds of things going on, and you still have to work on some of the day-to-day stuff. But if there's one thing that you're thinking about in the morning, it's this, and how do we get that across the line?
Yeah. So it's funny because we've talked about now your experience. We talked about a particular book. So, but I also in your background, you've got a great education from Duke and Northwestern. And I've got a business education. I sometimes wonder, like, am I using any of this formal education?
Right.
When I compare it to my experience and my post, the reading and all that, what do you think?
Well, I can tell you, I don't do a lot of computer science coding anymore, which is what my Duke degree was in. And I think that One of the most fun things about business is there's always a new challenge. I think I've often gravitated towards that, and that's how my career path in some ways have looked a little bit meandering at times on, well, geez, you were a banker and then a consultant and then running marketing for a burger chain and a CEO for a massage therapist chain. Like that's a little bit random, but it's fun because it's always a new challenge, right? Yeah. And you're always learning. And I think that sometimes I think that the biggest lessons I've learned from my formal education, you don't necessarily realize how you're applying it day to day. But I think the most important part of any education is learning how to figure out how to solve stuff. And you kind of get that pattern development along the way. And that's what it's all about.
That's pretty cool. As you think about that too, well, as we reach a point in our careers, we wonder back, we look back, and we're like, I wish I had known that when I was starting out. What's that for you? Like, if you'd only known this, life would have been so much better.
I think that if there was one thing that I could kind of go back and tell my 23 or 24 year old self, it's that what's gonna drive success for me is going to be the quicker I can figure out how to make and be effective through my team versus through just what I'm doing on my own. I think early in my career, I was very focused on being the strongest contributor, the best idea, the hardest worker, the most reliable, and you know that got me pretty far. But ultimately, particularly in the role I'm in now, it's literally not possible for me to do, let alone do everything. I can't even really be in charge of anything individually. I have to delegate that down. And my role really is spent as much as anything talking to people, keeping them motivated, making sure they know what the most important thing is, and hopefully keeping things on track. Yeah.
So you use the phrase keeping them motivated, and that always gets me going. Because I learned early in my career, like, very early, there were HR people who tell me it's my job to keep people motivated. And I decided later on that, no, it's not my job to keep people motivated. Do you really think it's your job to keep people motivated?
Well, I think that what keeps people motivated is they need to have two of three things. One is they have to really like what they're doing. Two, they need to feel like that is advancing them in the career. And three, they need to be paid well. And if they get two out of those three right, then they're going to be able to work really hard for you for a long time.
So in keeping people motivated, what you really mean is it's your job to make sure they're getting at least two out of those three things. Yeah,
that's right.
Got it.
And I think that, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that. But I think understanding what each individual person on the team's goals are, what are they looking for? Mm-hmm. How have I aligned what their role looks like up against that? You know, some people care a lot about trying to get promoted 3 times in 4 years. Mm. Some people care about being able to get home to their kids by 5:15 at night for dinner. Some people care about how they're going to get the next $10,000 raise. I mean, it just depends. Yeah. And if you know that and you're having that conversation and you're putting it in the context of what you can provide them, you can build a great team and a really effective team.
Got it. I think that's a good note to end on, although I'd love to continue the conversation, but I'm going to wrap up here. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to my conversation with Jeremy Morgan, CEO of Elements Massage. Jeremy, thanks for joining me today.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
It's been great. And thanks for joining ProCo 360 today, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests define success in more than one dimension. We could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. Please help this show thrive by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast via your app. Also, please submit a review. That goes a long, long way in helping us succeed. Thanks to subscribing to the newsletter. You can do that at proco360.com. Also, thanks to show sponsors MicroStar Cake Logistics, Community Banks of Colorado, Jones and Keller, and the Colorado Chamber of Commerce. And finally, thanks to show engineer Mike here at Third and James Studios. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.